from EWTN, the Global Catholic Network. This is EWTN News Nightly.
We are 2 days away from the start of the conclave, and for now it is quiet in St. Peter's Square. But soon, thousands will gather to look for the white smoke announcing to the world that we have a new pope. Thank you for being with us. I'm Tara Mergener. Today is also the first day after the Novem Dialis, or the 9 days mourning Pope Francis, but his memory is still being honored all across the globe. In Brazil, the famous Christ the Redeemer statue was lit up with Pope Francis's image and the words Todos, 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 or everyone, everyone, everyone. These are the words said by the Pope at the World Youth Day in Portugal in 2023 when he told the crowds that there is room for everyone at the church. And in Rome, cardinals celebrated the last two of Novendio Masses on Saturday and Sunday. In their homilies, they remembered Pope Francis for his heart, his outreach to others, and his prayerful life.
He was asking us to have a heart and a spirit pure and free enough to recognize the women and men of today, our brothers and sisters, especially the poorest, the last, the discarded, because in them is the Lord. And so that with our passion for God, the kingdom, and for humanity, we will be able, like Peter, to respond to the Lord. Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you.
Tu sai che ti amo.
La sua intensa vita pastorale, i suoi innumerevoli incontri.
His intense pastoral life, his countless meetings, were grounded in the long moments of prayer that the Ignatian discipline had imprinted in him. Many times, he reminded us that contemplation is a dynamism of love that elevates us to God, not to detach us from the earth, but to make us inhabit it in profundity. And everything he did under the gaze of Mary. There will remain in our memory and in our hearts his 126 steps before the Salus Populi Romani. And now that he rests at the beloved image, we entrust him with gratitude and confidence to the intercession of the Mother, of the Lord and our Mother.
Alla intercessione della Madre del Signore e Madre nostra.
As the conclave approaches, the Sistine Chapel is preparing for the historic election. All the cardinals present in Rome are still meeting nearly every day to discuss the needs of the church. EWTN Vatican journalist Valentina Di Donato caught up with some of them.
Under the awe-inspiring frescoes of Michelangelo, preparations for the upcoming conclave just 2 days away are in motion. The Sistine Chapel is where the conclave takes place, the Catholic Church's most significant election. The cardinals will gather in this room and decide who will become the next pope to lead the church.
We're here to speak with cardinals before their pre-conclave meetings to get a sense of what their feeling and their hopes will be for the future of the Catholic Church.
Cardinal Ignatius Suhario Harjot Mojo, Archbishop of Jakarta, tells us that he is entering the Sistine Chapel with an open heart.
The Church needs what is stated in the Second Vatican Council's Gaudium et Spes, the joy and hope of humanity, joy and hope of the disciples of Christ.
But the Cardinal says he has still not made a decision.
No.
I still don't know who I will vote for. For now, I don't know anything. This is the first time I am here at the meeting of cardinals.
On the momentous occasion, the world's most iconic temporary chimney was installed by firemen for the Vatican on Friday. And throughout the conclave, cardinals will have no contact with the outside world. The secretive locked door rite of a conclave makes it so all eyes will be on the chimney, the only signal to the public of who will be the successor of St. Peter. White smoke will signal a new pope, but if a pope has still not received the required two-thirds vote, the vote will be signaled by black smoke, meaning the conclave continues, and that a pope has still not been selected. Pope Francis has, in many ways, reshaped the College of Cardinals, nominating 108 of the 133. And for many of the cardinals, this will be their first conclave participating in voting for the next pope. this will be the first conclave with more than 120 cardinals. Many of the late Pope's choices of cardinals hailing from non-traditional countries has brought a shift in the geographical representation within the college. Cardinal Sacco, Patriarch of Baghdad for the Chaldeans, tells EWTN his hopes for the upcoming conclave and what sort of person should be Pope.
We are discussing, we are listening to each other to have a real, you know, a concrete idea about the new Pope. We cannot vote for someone who we don't know him.
Will the next pope be in line with Pope Francis's legacy? Cardinal Pula, Metropolitan Archbishop of Hyderabad, leaves his answer open-ended.
It is very good that you asked. Pope Francis, there is no doubt he is a good leader, merciful father, who took care of the Universal Church. And now you have to understand that we have to select a successor of St. Peter.
But despite the apparent politicization of the upcoming conclave, Cardinal Jean-Paul Vesco is hopeful that the choice has already been made.
It's beautiful, so that's why I'm at peace. I'm sure that in the end, there's one we are meant to discover, and the Lord has already named him in his heart. That one we must discover, but among many beautiful and strong personalities.
In Rome, Valentina Di Donato for EWTN News Nightly.
And of course, there's been plenty of speculation going into the conclave, but what happens after it begins is anyone's guess. And for more, we turn to Frank Rocha, Senior Vatican Analyst for EWTN News. Frank, thank you for joining us. The cardinals meet today and tomorrow, then enter the conclave on Wednesday. What will the schedule look like that day?
Well, on that day, in the morning, they have a mass, which is a very important mass for the election of a pontiff. The dean of the College of the Cardinals, Cardinal Ray, will give a homily, and giving them guidance for what they're going to do. In 2005, we remember that homily was very important because then Cardinal Ratzinger, who was the dean of the college, gave it, and he talked about a dictatorship of relativism, and he was later elected. Many people think that that speech was very important. In this case, Cardinal Ray is a retired cardinal. He won't be going to the conclave, so he's not making a speech that could get him elected, but he will give a speech that will give some guidance. Then in the afternoon, they'll go into the Sistine Chapel, they'll take an oath, and they'll vote. They'll have one ballot on Wednesday evening, only one. In the succeeding days, they'll have two in the morning, two in the afternoon, until they get a pope. So in the past years, we've had conclaves that have lasted a relatively short time. Last time, it was about 48 hours, the whole process. Some people are saying they should have a longer conclave this time. Some people want a short one. It depends on whom you're backing. Some people who are backing Cardinal Parolin, the former Secretary of State, who's one of the most well-known of the cardinals, are hoping for a short conclave because they think that could favor him. Others are hoping for a longer conclave to maybe find someone new.
That's right. And, you know, we've heard bits and pieces of what was discussed in the general congregations. Judging by the topics they are discussing, can we make any predictions about what the College of Cardinals is looking for in this next pope? Certainly a lot of opinions.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, the summaries have been very broad today. For example, we were told that in the morning they talked about the importance of Caritas, the umbrella organization for the charitable works of the church, and how that's very important, and how they wanted a pope who would be a good pastor, and they wanted a church that's not self-referential. That's sort of an echo of Cardinal Bergoglio's speech at the General Congregations in 2013. So I think from that you can't glean. One here is that they're talking about perhaps a collegiality is a very important theme inside the call, apparently. You know, in other words, respecting the prerogatives of bishops and having the College of Bishops with the Pope always as the head, of course. So that could be a big theme.
Yes, and of course, there's been a lot of focus, meantime, on Pope Francis's legacy. Do you think the college is likely to elect a pope in the same mold as Francis?
Well, I think in some respects, probably an emphasis on justice, peace, defense of migrants, care for the environment. I suspect those themes will carry over, and that whoever takes over will address those themes and maybe not emphasize him quite as much as Pope Francis, but those will be important. So in that sense, I think his legacy will continue. Others are more questionable. Many people feel, and bishops and cardinals felt, that Pope Francis sometimes was too monarchical, and that, as I was saying before, that maybe he should have given more space to his bishops. And so there might be someone who's seen as more of a someone of a team player, maybe someone who is more attentive to institutional norms and traditions and doesn't try to run everything himself. That's possible. We do hear that.
You know, and I have to ask you, you have been reporting from the Vatican since 2007. What is it like when you see that white smoke and the new pope step onto that balcony of St. Peter's?
Well, it's very exciting and mixed. I remember in 2013, I thought it wasn't white. I said, no, that's not white. It's not going to. And then I said, no, it is white. So it was. And then everyone, inevitably, you get nervous, even if you're as well as prepared as you possibly could be. You still don't know what's going to happen. And that moment when the name comes and the person walks out and the man walks out, your hand shakes a little bit when you push the send button, even if you've got the biography ready on the person, which we hope we do.
It's so exciting and so much anticipation. Frank Broca, thank you for your very valuable firsthand insights.
Thank you, Tara.
All right, and another large group of religious are gathering in Rome, the International Union of Superiors General. Hundreds of religious sisters leading their orders from across the world are gathered for their plenary assembly. This kind of meeting happens every 3 years, and this year it happened to coincide with the conclave. Sisters are gathering to discuss this year's theme, Consecrated Life, a Hope That Transforms, as well as what they hope to see from the next pope.
From the next pope, I think I'd like that he carries on the maybe the key things that this late pope has been founding on, especially promoting women religious in some leadership positions like he has done.
Topics discussed include war, human trafficking, and migration, as well as climate change. We are also learning today that one of Pope Francis's final wishes will soon be granted. One of the famous Pope Mobiles will be used as a health clinic on wheels for the children of Gaza. The vehicle was gifted to the Catholic charity Caritas Jerusalem after Francis' visit to the West Bank in 2014. They say that in his final months, the Pope asked that they use it to help the children. It will drive around with a doctor and medical staff, as well as equipment to test for infections. As the conclave is set to begin on Wednesday, we would like to invite you to watch for that white smoke right here on EWTN. Each day of the conclave, we will be live at these hours to see if we have a new pope. It begins Wednesday evening. Well, we have a lot more still to come on EWTN News Nightly, including photo controversy. President Trump makes headlines after posting an AI-generated image of himself. Hear how church leaders are responding. And church leaders in New York are sounding the alarm over assisted suicide measures. We'll have details.
Catholics loved it. I had nothing to do with it. Somebody made up a picture of me dressed like the Pope, and they put it out on the internet. That's not me that did it. I have no idea where it came from. Maybe it was AI, but I know nothing about it. I just saw it last evening. Actually, my wife thought it was cute.
All right, President Donald Trump reacting today after sharing a computer-generated photo over the weekend of him as Pope. The president posted the AI-generated image on his Truth Social platform. It was later shared on X, formerly known as Twitter, by the official White House account. A lot of Catholics did not love it. Bishop Thomas Paprocki of Springfield, Illinois, says Trump should apologize. Another U.S. church leader currently in Rome shared his thoughts with EWTN's Colin Flynn.
Look, I think it was a bad joke. I think it was kind of a sophomoric attempt at humor. I don't think at all it represents some, disdain for the Catholic Church or some attack on the Catholic Church. President Trump has signaled in all sorts of ways his support for and affection for the Catholic Church. I think it was a bad joke that obviously landed very poorly and was seen as offensive by a lot of Catholics. And I wish he hadn't done it.
All right. Bishop Barron also said he did not think the president should remove the online post. Vice President J.D. Vance, a Catholic, defended the president, saying as a general rule, he is fine with people telling jokes. In the Oval Office today, President Trump announced the 2027 NFL draft would take place in the nation's capital. In attendance, the NFL commissioner and the mayor of Washington, D.C. The plan in 2027 is to hold the huge event on the National Mall. But when the president took questions from reporters, the subject quickly switched to illegal immigration. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports. Owen.
Tara, in the Oval Office, the president was asked about a financial incentive to immigrants in the U.S. illegally to self-deport, included a plane ticket.
The Trump administration will pay immigrants in the United States illegally who return to their home country voluntarily $1,000 as it pushes forward with its mass deportation agenda.
But what we thought we'd do is a self-deport, where we're going to pay each one a certain amount of money, and we're going to get them a beautiful flight back to where they came from.
Advocates for immigrants say it's often worse for people to leave the country and not fight their case in immigration court, especially if they're already in removal proceedings, because it may appear they have abandoned their asylum application. Earlier, Border Czar Tom Homan told reporters,
I think people are finally getting the message, if you leave on your own, you can take advantage of legal programs, come back.
On Air Force One, President Trump said Mexican President Claudia Sheinbaum was too fearful of drug cartels after she rejected his proposal to send U.S. troops to Mexico.
If Mexico wanted help with the cartels, we would be honored to go in and do it. I told her that I would be honored to go in and do it. The cartels are trying to destroy our country. They're evil.
President Trump also wants to reopen and expand Alcatraz to house America's most ruthless and violent offenders.
It represents something very strong, very powerful in terms of law and order.
The island prison in California was closed back in the 1960s due to crumbling infrastructure.
Well, we need detention beds, and, we do contracts with a lot of states, a lot of local municipalities, so that's certainly an option, especially for the significant public safety threats, national security threats.
Another headline coming out of the White House, President Trump wants to slap a 100% tariff on any and all movies coming into the U.S. that are produced overseas.
It's abandoned the USA, where it started. And we'll get it back.
It's common for both large and small films to include production in the US and in other countries. But the president warns on Truth Social, this is a concerted effort by other nations and therefore a national security threat.
But it's not a good situation. So we're going to meet with the industry. I want to make sure they're happy with it because we're all about jobs.
President Trump also said today that he spoke by phone with Turkey's president about several things, including the wars in Gaza and Ukraine. And tomorrow, President Trump sits down with Canada's newly elected prime minister, Mark Carney. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
Owen, thank you. Congress returns this week facing new questions about the president's national security team. Secretary of State Marco Rubio is adding to his list of duties by becoming the interim national security advisor. And this comes after Mike Waltz was removed from that post and nominated to be U.S. ambassador to the United Nations. Democrats say removing Waltz creates a dangerous void.
I think he is the first of a number who will go if we're fortunate, because this national security establishment is an abject failure, beginning with Hegseth. My hope is that Trump is not scapegoating.
Other Democrats are again questioning the president's leadership and judgment.
So this is not a recipe for strong or consistent leadership. It's not a recipe for stability at the top of our government when we face a lot of national security threats all around the globe.
The lead Democrat on the Senate Intelligence Committee, Mark Warner, also worries whether Secretary of State Marco Rubio can effectively do both jobs.
Number of adversaries has gone up dramatically as Trump's approach has been so awful to our allies. The other around national security advisor has really grown into a major job. Maybe slimming down some of that portfolio could make sense, but I don't see how any individual could do both of those.
Republicans stayed away from criticizing the move, instead praising Waltz's UN nomination. Senator Lindsey Graham posted on X, Mike Waltz is an outstanding pick to serve as our next UN ambassador. As national security advisor, he has provided President Trump with sound advice and has a clear-eyed view of the world, both regarding our friends and our adversaries.
Mike Waltz has an incredible background and experience. He worked diligently to make certain he had a strong role in the national security team of the president. And I'm certainly glad that he's going to be retained and staying in a strong role in this administration.
Meanwhile, House Republicans face major division as they look to advance President Trump's agenda. Medicaid, state and local taxes, and spending cuts top the list. The next 2 weeks could be critical for Republicans to getting a bill passed. Church leaders in New York are asking the faithful to contact lawmakers about a measure to legalize physician-assisted suicide. Cardinal Timothy Dolan is joining the state's bishops and sounding the alarm over the proposals. The measures in the State House and Senate would amend New York public health law to allow a terminally ill adult with a prognosis of 6 months or less to live to request a medication from a doctor that would hasten his or her death. In a statement, the church leader said the measures would, quote, turn do no harm on its head, leaving vulnerable individuals, people with disabilities, the elderly, and those in impoverished and medically underserved communities, subject to pressure and coercion to end their lives so as not to be a burden to society or an excessive cost to insurance companies. For more, we turn to Alex Schadenberg, Executive Director at the Euthanasia Prevention Coalition. Alex, thanks for joining us. First off, tell us a little more about this measure in New York State. How did it start? Where do things stand now?
Well, assisted suicide has been debated in New York like this. There have bills year after year after year coming up, but it's not ever gone this far. So last week, the bill passed in the House Assembly, and so now it will go on to the Senate. So we're really hoping that it gets stopped in the Senate. So we have to be very clear, because when we're talking about assisted suicide, we're talking about a law that will give doctors the right in law to kill or to be directly involved with causing the death of their patients. This is, and we, you know, people like us who are opposed to killing people, we recognize how important this is.
As we mentioned, Cardinal Timothy Dolan and the state's bishops released a statement asking the faithful to contact their lawmakers and voice their opposition. What did you make of the statement and what the church leaders are doing so far? Are they doing enough? And how do you actually see this playing out?
Well, I think the importance is that the church is speaking out and getting people active, because we need to act as citizens in every state that we live, every place that we live, because the government wants to move forward on these things, and this is like a cost-cutting measure to kill people. Now, I'm a Canadian. What we've seen in my own country is a lot of people with disabilities have now died by euthanasia based on being poor, homeless, people who have had a hard time getting medical treatment. These are not very different than the issues that would be faced in New York. Now, the other thing about it is the New York bill, I call it to be, it's like a Trojan horse type bill. They claim it's really tight. But the goal for this bill is they want to get it passed. And like in all other states, like right now in the U.S., there's six states that have legal assisted suicide where they're trying to expand their laws. So there's 10 states total that have legal assisted suicide, but six of the states are trying to expand their laws. So what you see is this goal of legalizing and then expanding the law once it's legal. So this is what's going on in New York right now.
All right, a lot of moving parts. We also know Prime Minister Mark Carney recently won a snap election. You said the vote was one of the most important in the country's history. Why do you say that? And what does Prime Minister Carney's win mean for assisted suicide in Canada, do you think?
Yeah, we're very concerned about what's happening in Canada. So in March, the UN Council on People with Disabilities condemned Canada's euthanasia law, and they called for the government to reverse portions of the law, that we stop allowing euthanasia for people who aren't terminally ill, that we prevent euthanasia for people who are mentally ill, because that's part of the law that they're expanding to, that we not allow child euthanasia, because the government has advocated for child euthanasia. You know, these are all things that are coming at us in Canada, and the problem is this liberal government we've had has been in place for almost 10 years, and now you have a new leader, but it's the same people. So we are in great fear that they'll continue in the same direction. So basically, we've been pushing very hard that they do a complete review of the law, because that's never been done. So we've had a lot, like every year, our euthanasia deaths are expanding very quickly, and it's being normalized. And that's a great concern. We're doing what we can to try and make a difference, but I'm very concerned about our new government.
Obviously a developing story. Alex, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much for the time.
All right, up next on EWTN News Nightly, the right choice. Good news for Catholic schools in one U.S. state. We will tell you where and what it could mean for you. Finally, tonight, Catholic schools across Texas are preparing for a surge in applications after the state enacted one of the largest school choice programs in its history. Governor Greg Abbott signing the new measure into law this weekend. Now, under that law, qualifying families will receive up to $10,000 per student to cover educational expenses. Initially, the program will serve up to 90,000 students with potential for expansion. It also prioritizes low-income students and those with disabilities. All right, we thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tara Berginer. Good night and God bless.